This is Dana Eggert and Debbie Berkman for the Pittsburgh section of National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, on January 19, 1977, interviewing Mrs. Philip Hoffman. Good morning, Mrs. Hoffman, and thank you very much for allowing us to come and interview you. We're really excited about this. We'd like to start kind of chronologically and get some idea of your parents, where they were born, approximately when, and from what countries they came, your ancestors, if we could.
Well, my mother and father emigrated to the United States from Lithuania.
Could you give me their names?
My mother's name was Fanny, and my father, Samuel Novak, N-O-V-A-K.
And were they married when they emigrated here?
Yes.
They didn't come with their families?
They came with one daughter. They were married in Bialystok.
Could you spell that?
B-I-A-L-Y-S-T-O-C-K. I think that's how
okay.
It's spelled.
Have you ever been back there?
The closest I was on this here mission when we went to Poland. And Bialystok, I understand, has been one of these here major towns that has been switched from Poland to Lithuania to Latvia and that entire in that area.
That's interesting. Very interesting. You said that they came with one daughter.
My one and only sister, and Lillian, who lives in New York.
And she was born in Lithuania?
She was born in Bialystok.
And what do you remember what year they came over about?
My father came over in 1904 and my mother in 1907. It was a custom in those years. People could not afford to come together.
Mm-hmm.
And the husband would migrate first and try to find work and earn enough money to send tickets for the family, rest of the family, to
and
come over.
What city did he come to first?
He came right to New York City.
And he stayed in New York?
No, he was up in Fall River, Mass for a short time where he had an uncle, but then came back to New York.
And you were born in New York?
I was born in New York City.
And you grew up there?
Yes. Born and raised and went to school there until I was married.
Okay. Could you give us some idea of the home environment when you were growing up? I'm sure it was, you know, different than what we would expect because they were immigrant parents and things.
Well, the home environment in my home was... I don't know how I could really put it.
Well, at least...
It was a very comfortable setting. It was not what you would call an intellectual home.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an open door where whoever came found themselves very much at ease.
That's nice.
My father was a very warm, outgoing man. He loved people.
So you had more fireside chats kind of thing than
yes,
going
more,
down to concerts and stuff like that?
That's right. More around the table type discussions of what was going on. And my mother, who was caught in the European old country way of bringing up children, was illiterate,
mm-hmm.
because only the boys were supposed to get an education. But in spite of her illiteracy, she had the most brilliant mind, fantastic mathematician orally.
That's so true of so many of the women that immigrated.
And her conceptions and grasping of the situations that were going on in the United States when she got here as compared to Europe, that I always refer to her as one of the first women's lib.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. She was really fantastic, at least with me. Somehow or other, my sister did not get the same thing. But both my brother and myself, but myself particularly, the fact that I was a girl. And the thing that she never could forget and could get over was the day she enrolled me in elementary school. And the fact that she took me and they asked for the name, and it was no such thing as what color you were or what religion you had, and the teacher just says, "It's all right, Mrs. Novak. Gertrude will be fine here. You can go home now."
Isn't that nice?
And the thought that I could get the same type of an education equally to a boy, that this to her dying day, that she, no matter what kind of stories they would try to build up about after the revolution in Russia and this communal type of living and that the workmen have it so good there and all, and her answer to everyone would be bread and water in America, but never to go back to Russia.
That's really, it gives me kind of goosebumps. Well, this
really was her philosophy, mm-hmm. that she was one, and that's why I suppose I too, that no matter what the fallacies and how far we've come from the original concept we think of the United States of America, we have to be point blank, honest, and thankful. There's still no other country like it in the world.
You're right. Let me get back to one other thing. You do have a brother.
I have a brother that I'm very close with.
And what is his name?
Leon. And Novak.
Where does he live?
He lives in New York.
And when was he born?
He was born in 1909.
And you were born in?
1907.
Right after your parents came?
Yes.
Your mother came from... What was the religious atmosphere in your home?
Well, it was an Orthodox background. It was observant. My father was more fanatic than my mother. My mother was, as you can gather, she was a little more broad-minded. Mm-hmm. She could not go as far as what you would call today conservative, but she felt there were certain things that were being carried too far in this environment, that she believed that you could worship God and be faithful to your beliefs without being fanatic about it.
That's interesting. What did your father do? What was your economic background at that time?
He was a roofer and tinsmith, supposedly in business for himself. And to be honest, it would be a case when it was his season that things were a little rosier, and the day the weather got bad and you couldn't go out working, you kind of worried where the next meal was going to come from.
Sure.
Yet at home, one never knew that there was always food on the table, and we were dressed comfortably. We lived, in comparison to other immigrants, I would say we lived a little better. My mother, as I say, was a wonderful manager, wonderful. And she had
Did
a great deal of
all?
Pride.
No,
she had a very interesting thing happen. Where she did want to, in those days, a lot of women, not having any special skills, as long as they had a sewing machine, they became seamstresses. Mm-hmm. And she thought she could supplement where some other foreign members of the family really discouraged her, to say that the expression in those days was, you can't fill a bucket from both sides. And if you're going to start working and your husband sees that he isn't the sole supporter, he'll remain studying in the synagogue and you'll become the breadwinner.
She really was a women's liver, wasn't she? That's great. Can you tell us something about the community surroundings in which you grew up?
Well, that was interesting. That was interesting. I was brought up in Manhattan. Not the Lower East Side, but then Harlem, which was like, you probably have heard the stories of the Jews of that period, that as they became more affluent, they moved uptown. Well, ironically, we lived uptown all our years. We never did live on the Lower East Side. And our community was a middle-class community. And it was amazing. The periods I remember, going back to 5, 6 years old and on, and going to school. We lived in apartments, and in those days too, we were supposedly very lucky that it was steam heated. Although in weather like this, when the pipes froze, you got no heat. Were people with pride, and the children at school, there was no caste system or class distinction, even though I remember having a little girlfriend who had grown sisters who were able to give her what we call today an allowance. She went to dancing school and she had these ballerina costumes. But nevertheless, we were all one. And it was the same thing whether we had a German super or and even in those days, we had some supers that had children of mixed races. And it was block playing, whether it was, not baseball, the other
stick
one.
Stickball or something?
No, it's a form of baseball with a bigger ball.
Softball.
That we had our block teams, and boys and girls played. And truthfully, we would take milk cans and put them out for the bases. And then we'd play one block against the other. We had no racial violence of any sort. And of course, basically, as far as I was concerned, and a number like ours, our family's basic interests were around the synagogue. And while those that had gotten involved with building or with unions, which had just been in its infancy, in my home we didn't have much of that, because as I say, my father supposedly was a businessman on his own. So, but the family that came, there was a lot of discussion on the benefits of unionization, and there were quite a cross section of feeling about it.
There was a lot of open discussion in the home about it. Could you contrast at all how you grew up in New York as compared with how you think people grew up in Pittsburgh?
Well,
was it
totally different? It was totally different. It was a case where, number one, say for instance, the Sabbath or the Jewish holidays, regardless of what your background was, there was definitely a distinction between a holiday and every day. You certainly knew that you had to get dressed. And even if you didn't go to services, but you had to appear like a decent child, there was, you were curtailed of certain things. And of course, even at that, I know whether it was only myself at the time, there were some children from families who did use transportation on the Sabbath. In our home, we did not. And where we lived, in the heart of Manhattan. It was on 112th Street between 5th and Lenox, close to Central Park. And it was a very comfortable Jewish area. And it was very accessible to, I call it accessible, to the museums of natural history and the museums of art, which were down at 82nd Street and 5th Avenue or 77th and Central Park. And in those days, friends with myself would think nothing of on a Saturday walking along Central Park to go down to the museum.
So you did really take advantage of being in there.
So as I say that there was no problem with observances that one of the pastimes on the Sabbath would be for mothers and fathers and the children to go into Central Park and meet up with other friends. And at that time you would see already the next generation coming along with grandchildren and buggies, and it would be a get-together.
It was kind of recreation.
That's right, that's right. You did not, well, of course it was before the radio had already come in, but it certainly was much before the advent of television.
Was your religious education was taken care of mainly in the home?
I had a smattering of religious education, and that too was due to my mother, that my father had arranged for a private rabbi to come in after school to study with my brother. And just like boys, he would always be stalling coming home from school. And I would come right home from school.
Take advantage.
No, and my mother would sit down and said to the rabbi, she said, I know you're here for Leo, but I don't know when he'll show up. Until he comes, take advantage of the time and you teach her. And that's where I got some of my basic, it isn't what you would call religious education, that he taught me how to read a Yiddish paper and how to write in Yiddish, which on my last trip to Poland stood me in great stead. It was the only way I could communicate. And in Israel, too, there are still a few people that the only way I communicate is in speaking Yiddish with them.
It's exciting. You said you did go to primary school.
Yes, and through high school.
You did, through in New York in the public school system. No college?
No, I had, at one point, I did quit work thinking that I was going to go on to school. And it really was both financially and through the urging of the people I was working for, that it was at the time when women were first really, to some extent, being recognized and opportunities were opening up for women in the business field.
What kind of work did you do?
Well, I don't know. I was a secretary, bookkeeper in charge of an office. I'm one of those that had my pulse on everything that was going on.
Could you give us some idea of what kind of health services and medical services were available to you and your family in your early years?
Well, and as I say, from the way we lived, we had private medical service.
You had a family doctor and...
Yeah. There was only one time I remember my father belonged to some benevolent organization that had a doctor on there that could be called, and the only time we called on him was out of desperation that my mother took very sick in the flu epidemic of 1918.
Is that the swine flu?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that
Do
well.
You?
I remember that well. I was a type. In our house, my sister, my brother, and my mother took sick, but my mother was seriously ill.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, my father and I, and knock on wood all through life, that I've had a certain amount of immunity to some of these things. And we were the well ones, but we resorted to him, and at the time, his answer was, there's nothing I can do, it's only up to the Almighty.
That's really the only major health problems that you had then, was that?
Well, one of our biggest crises in our home was with my brother. That my mother had a set of twins in Europe, and lost both of them, one at 9 months and one at a year and a half. So naturally, when my brother was born, that everything centered around him, and just like it did, all you had to do was sit at a table and talk about an ailment, and he already was sick. And it was pathetic. And he at one time developed lobar pneumonia, which in those days was more fatal. There was no antibiotics or what. And it was that by the time my father insisted we had to get a nurse in to relieve my mother, when the nurse got there, she says to my mother, "What are you doing out of bed?" She thought she was the patient. No, those were the...
Certainly.
Mm-hmm. But other than that, on the whole, we were comparatively fortunate of not having any major problems.
That is lovely. Now we get to the best part. Tell us about your husband, how you met him, your courtship and things like that. Was he living in New York?
Well, of course, that's a altogether different story.
Okay.
Number one, he was a first cousin of mine.
Uh-huh.
And I actually met him on a visit that my mother and I made from New York to Brownsville, Pennsylvania, where we had the family.
Do you remember how old you were when you first met him?
17.
Mm. And did you,
Well, no, it was something entirely different. At any rate, it so happens that he had just sold his business and he was between doing things. He had been to the coast and back, and that summer, the fact that the family had company from out of town, he didn't find it necessary to start looking for a new business, and we got to know each other. But there was a tremendous difference in age. At that point, he was more than twice as old as I was. And the outcome was that while we were attracted to each other, he naturally felt that it was just a childish crush. And P.S., it took 10 years, and we were married 10 years later.
What? Can you give me the date, just so we have the...
November 3rd, 1935.
And your children, you have...
I have two girls.
Two girls.
Marilyn, born in 1937. And Carol in 1940.
And where did you first live? Were you in Pittsburgh?
Yes, we came straight to Pittsburgh. And at the time, it was how I ever survived that winter. I will never remember. I came here in the winter of 35-36, preceding a flood.
Oh, where did you live?
Well, I had a weird experience of 1 month at the Adrian Apartments on Bayard. And then moved to the Schenley Arms at Center and Bigelow. And from there set up housekeeping in Squirrel Hill.
And your husband owned his own business?
Yes, he had already, he and Rube Helfan had formed the Thrift Drug Company in March of 1935.
Well, you said he